Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Vic Nizar.
Some big numbers coming out of last night at Rogers Arena. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar. Canucks win. The jerseys go to the rafters. Everybody goes home happy, unless everybody includes the Chicago Blackhawks, who left that arena having fired 49 pucks Jacob Markstrom's way. Not all of them high danger opportunities, but probably thinking one of almost 50 should probably get through.
I know everyone was looking for symmetry last night. Be like, oh, what are the 22-33 moments?
It was desperate, wasn't it?
At one point, though.
55 saves?
Did everyone not think that the 55 saves was going to be there? Everyone thought it. Nobody wanted to see 55 shots against, but everyone was thinking, man, that would be something special.
And I'll tell you this.
Just give a couple more chances.
I'll tell you this. He would have stopped the next six.
Yeah.
Jacob Markstrom was that dialed in last night. And you need a little luck. You need a little luck in those situations. You need a little help from the post sometimes. You need a little help from the crossbar. But it does seem when you are in a run of rich form, a vein of rich form as he was last night, that those bounces, they seem to go your way, don't they?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like a night like last night kind of makes you believe in bigger things. Like the positive vibe in that building was so awesome. And it felt like Chicago was trying to score on more than just Jacob Markstrom. It felt like they were trying to score and get one past an entire city. And, you know, that's not taking anything away from Jacob Markstrom. It felt impossible to score. And
well, this is a sport and this is a league that constantly looks for bulletin board material. We hear that all the time. And when the Blackhawks found out that the Canucks requested them for this night, I imagine whether it should infuriate them or motivate them further or not, I imagine there were guys in that room who go, all right, careful what you wish for.
Yeah, but it's...
It shouldn't, but
no.
You know this.
It's the same thing as the Richard Sherman, Baker Mayfield thing, right? You find any way to motivate yourself, right? Nobody believes the Patriots are ever underdogs, but when they're talking about, we're still here, as if they're underdogs, you use whatever you can to motivate. So, I get it from that sense. But, you know, it's a prestigious honor to be selected for that moment for the Blackhawks organization to say, you know, Daniel Henrichs-Dean wanted that team to be there. It's not as if it's... I know you were talking about playoff formats and you choose your... It's not like that.
No. There were a lot of emotions involved in these series. And some of the biggest moments of our careers came against this team. It seems fitting. Mm-hmm. And I agree. It did seem fitting. That's the right choice. The last thing you wanted was, oh, hey, let's bring in the Minnesota Wild, a team that you don't have any real feel about.
Plus, you had Crow there as well.
Yes. Like it works on a lot of levels.
So much, yeah. The ceremony yesterday hit every note.
It really did.
It flew by. I know it was like 45, 50 some odd minutes. Felt like 12.
Well, part of the reason that it took longer than anticipated off the get-go was the extended ovation certain guys got.
Sure.
Trevor Linden was the first that I noticed, and I was in the building, as were you last night. That one just kept going on for a while. And it was almost, to me, the second wave of the applause and the ovation was almost, hey, thanks for sharing with us that it wasn't easy for you to come back here. Thanks for being here. Mm-hmm. We still love you. That's what that was to me last night.
It was a night of appreciation, both for Daniel and Henrik, but, you know, because the whole gang was back together, right? It was a living yearbook.
I don't think most people would have predicted the Nazi chance. Really? I think they were great. No, I don't think people would have predicted that at the time. I thought he would have got a great ovation. I didn't think that would happen. It happened on two occasions last night during the ceremony.
Maybe just because of the momentum it generates of, okay, well, we did it for one guy. We should do it for the next guy. And then so on. I mean, Kevin Bieksa got the juice chant. And yeah, that ceremony, and it's a tip of the hat to the organization, because those things aren't easy to pull off, and getting all the people in town and all that, they hit it out of the park.
And it's tip of the hat to the people who showed up as well.
For sure.
Listen, there were some personal battles put aside last night for the betterment of the evening, and because it was a greater purpose, and it was honoring the two greatest Canucks of all time, and that's been confirmed by multiple parties that, hey, and this is one of the things that makes the Sedin so great, and we'll get to Ryan Kessler here in just one second. That's one of the things that makes the Sedin so great. They have always done it, and it has forced others to put things in perspective. They've always put things in perspective. Mm-hmm. They always have.
Well, just look at their speech.
How does it start?
Yeah,
it starts with Jay Bouwmeester, a guy they never played with, a guy who was never a Canuck,
mm-hmm.
but a guy that was in the hearts and minds of the hockey world. So they decided that with them having the floor, they would make sure everybody knew wherever they were watching that people here were thinking about him, and they specifically were thinking about him.
And we heard so many stories over the past week, right? And for me, it kind of culminated in yesterday when we spoke to Derek Dorstedt on the program with Andrew Walker and Sat Shaw. Just, you know, the emotion that was in his voice when he was talking about, hey, I tried sending them a text, and that was really difficult for me because I remember when I was going through my career-ending injury, you know, the status of injured players is something that doesn't get discussed enough, really, because generally speaking, they're not near the team. And he was pointing out that...
Well, every situation's different.
Yeah.
I made this...
Yes.
I pointed that out an hour ago, and we did run the clip. It's a great clip. In some situations, when you're in club med, just stay away.
Yeah.
We just don't want you around the team. We don't want any negative energy. It's nothing against you personally, but you've got work to do. We've got work to do. When you're healthy enough to help us do our work, come on back. And there's other places where it doesn't matter if you're mm-hmm. injured or not, but they felt it was important enough to go to management, to go to the coaching staff and say, we need to make sure he's around. They could just sense that it was going to help him dealing with the fact that his career's just come to an end.
Yeah,
this is going to be over and give him some normalcy in his life. And I thought when he used the word alienated, it was a great choice of words by Derek Dorsett, because I think all of us at some point in our life have felt that, haven't we?
Absolutely. And like, think of all the things that the Twins would have been going through, you know, kind of coming to the realization, hey, this is probably our last year. Let's appreciate every moment that we have in this upcoming year. But a moment like that happens and a friend and a player's career is over. They look beyond themselves. The final game, they give them the puck. You know, he commented on that yesterday. They go beyond themselves. And then the speech, going beyond themselves, is a trend here. And that's why you see all those personal battles put aside yesterday. And, you know, battles is the wrong term, but people were going beyond themselves for Daniel Henrich yesterday.
It was great to see. And then there was Ryan Kessler, and everybody wondered, and I think most of us believed exactly what happened last night would happen. I just did not believe for a second that this fan base in this city would put that potential relationship ahead of the Sedins on their night. I just couldn't see it happening, and it didn't. And then part of it...
I don't know. I feel like you're being too skeptical. I think...
I'm not being skeptical. I'm saying they weren't going to.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm saying there was no chance that was ever going to happen.
Yes, yes.
I didn't think for a second Ryan Kessler was ever going to get booed. I said there's no way they were going to put that ahead of the Sedins on that night. Even if there were people in that crowd last night that aren't Ryan Kessler fans, would call into this radio station right now and say, no chance, unequivocally, he never goes into the Ring of Honor. They were not going to let that be the distraction on a night that was about the Sedins.
For sure. It was all about those two guys, and the crowd got it, the players got it, everyone got it.
And boy, did it mean something to Ryan Kessler.
Sure.
You could see it on the screen, you could hear in his voice when he talked to Murph and when he talked to reporters afterwards. He had made no bones about it. He was nervous, he was anxious, and he was a little bit worried, and he wanted it to go the way it did, and he got what he wanted.
And it's a healthy thing. I know Sat tweeted out, you know, if a night like this can't heal old wounds, then, okay, nothing is going to for you. And it's moments like that that it's part of healing. I know everyone's scarred from 2011, and that's fine. But to me, it's like you need nights like this to minimize those scars and move forward.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because this week, to me, has healed wounds for Canucks fans in that regard as well. And last night, I think, was a display of that. Mm-hmm. As disappointed as people will always be that that seventh game was ultimately not won, they realized how special that team was, how special that year was, and that there was way more good than bad. And that it can't just boil down to one game.
Oh, no, you can't. Yeah, you can't think of the totality of what happened in 2011 and reduce it just to the destruction of it all. And I don't just mean how that team unfolded. I mean, like, everything, the city itself, all of that. If that's your only memory of what 2011 is, well, that speaks to something and how you view the world, right? There was so much good from those years that you have to extract those. And if you only choose to look at the negative, then you're choosing to look at the negative.
Comments are already pouring in. You can hit us up, Subway text line 650-650. Unsigned text, I love Juice's whole speech / roast, but I really love the shout-out he gave to our young core and how he called Bo our captain shows that he's a forever Canuck. And if you listen to Kevin Bieksa and Ryan Kessler's podcast, they've made that clear from the get-go, how much the organization means to them and that they really want the team to do well, how the best years of their lives professionally were spent in this city, how they still like coming back here just for personal time, less to do with something like last night. They just like spending time in this city, and that they will always be Canucks. They've made that very clear.
And Roberto Luongo kind of said that yesterday on our show. It's like, hey, my most important years of my career were here and played for two amazing franchises. And obviously, his connection with Florida is very personal to him. But you want to talk about career achievements and where those happened, it's in Vancouver. And, you know, when you reach a certain status, and that's why that conversation of, you know, Ring of Honor and jersey retirements come up with certain players, like, that's what we're talking about. Those guys are always going to be linked to this franchise.
Good afternoon, boys. I wanted to give a shout out to my dad after having the privilege to be able to take him to the game to witness history and celebrate Henrik and Daniel. 50 years ago on December 23rd, 1970, my dad saw the Canucks play their first game against the Leafs in Toronto. My first game was getting to watch the Canucks play the Kings in the 93 playoffs when I was just 6 years old. There have been good times and bad times. I wouldn't trade any of the memories of watching them with my dad for anything else. That comes in from Devin in Victoria.
That's sports.
And I wanted to read that as well because of everything last night signified and the two guys being honored and everything they stand for. They're about family.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. That is sports. And that's your formative years and the relationships you had. We talked about this yesterday, and we talked about it even on Monday night. It's always about how it makes you feel. It's less about, hey, my team won, I get to tell her. It's how does it make you feel?
Internally, right? The results and the winning, all that stuff matters when you're in conversation with others, right? But ultimately, like, there is a part of your fandom that nobody can get to. And how do you internalize it? And to exactly what you're saying, how does it make you feel? And the range of emotions you've gone through this week, that's what sports is. And sports is, to me, as unifying as pretty much anything in the world. If you can get moments like what Devin Victoria is talking about here, those family moments where, yeah, you can kind of go through things, but guess what? For 3 hours, there's a game on. We're together. And those memories, like, they're time capsules over a course of a lifetime.
Yeah, they most certainly are. What a wonderful night it was. It was great to be able to be in the building just to feel the energy of the people in there and how much they wanted to say thank you.
Well, was it a precursor to what could be coming soon as well? Like, that crowd was buzzing yesterday, and they hit the right spots of, you know, chanting for Markey, going after Corey Crawford, and, you know, booing Duncan Keith, right? They hit all those moments, and it felt like, you know, we've talked about the Canucks playing against St. Louis and certain games. Like, oh, yeah, it felt like a playoff game, blah, blah, blah. The crowd put in a playoff effort yesterday.
The Canucks didn't.
We'll get to that, but, you know,
they did, like, not. Jacob Markstrom did, but the rest of them not so much. Although Brandon Sutter had a 3-point night when all was said and done.
The quietest 3-point night you're gonna see.
Made a couple nice passes.
Yeah, just I thought the crowd, like, everyone just showed up, and, well, except for the Canucks, the crowd showed up big time. It was a big takeaway for me that they're ready for April hockey.
But this has been bubbling since last summer. It really has. There was a different sense of excitement in this city, not because, yep, hey, this might be a Stanley Cup contender, but as much as people complained about the JT Miller trade and did they give too much term to Tyler Myers, despite all of that and some of the dissenting opinions, there was a genuine vibe in this city of, this is going to feel different. This is going to be different. And so far, it's playing out differently. First place in the division, 69 points. We don't see them as a tier one team, but you're not going to find a lot of people around hockey right now that don't see them as a playoff team. I had a couple of different parties on my show today. Morrison, as in Brendan, said, yeah, I think they're going to be there when all is said and done. Ryan Callahan, no tie to this team except that JT Miller plays here, and they were teammates in Tampa Bay. Yeah, that's what I think I'm seeing right now. And he went on at length about JT Miller and how happy he is for him, but he thinks he sees a playoff team in Vancouver. And that's a different feel, man. It's been a long time.
Well, look, they're what, fourth in the West right now? Like, especially when you look at the rest of the Pacific. I know we talk about, you know, it's not that great and that's why they're going in. But they have a 10-goal differential advantage over everyone else in the Pacific. And that's a staggering amount. 10 goals in goal differential for, you know, a stat that we say is a pretty good indicator. If you have a positive one, you're going to the playoffs. Well, not only do they have a positive one, they've got a massive lead over everyone else in the division. So, yeah, that effort that the fans put forth last night, if you're heading to games in the future, that's kind of the standard that you've got to live up to now.
Crypto Cow, losing the cup is better than winning it. I'm going to stop it right there.
Hot take.
No, it's not. No chance. But I will go on with the text and the rationale behind it, because you look at everything up to that moment, good and bad, where only the winning moment getting the cup is what you remember. If you win, what do you remember about Canada's gold medal in 2010? The games leading up or the golden goal? I remember all of it.
I remember a ton.
I remember
Luongo was, you know, like the octopus arm, you know, making the big save there. It's
the game against Russia, the best first period Canada has ever played, arguably on the international stage.
Yeah.
That 4-1 barnstorming against Russia and the feel in that building and the shootout against this. Oh, no, I remember all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it all. I also remember the golden goal, and I'd remember the golden goal if it was scored by the States too, but I'd remember it a lot differently. So I understand where you were going, Crypto Cow. I cannot agree with you.
No. Look, it's obviously winning is better than losing, but it's how you process it. It's how you deal with that, right? It's how you go about, we can't change a reality, but we can change and control our actions with it and our decision-making with it.
Well, and I do think that the Sedin jersey retirement and the saluting of Ryan Kesler and Kevin Bieksa being warmly embraced, as he always is, I think all of that plays into the healing process. And the team looking like it's turning a corner here in 2020, that's certainly part of it too.
Well, there's a lot of references to, you know, I know there was a text earlier about Bo being the captain and what Sedin said about Travis Green and all that. There was a lot of references to, hey, there's the players that used to play here recognize that there's another run coming for this team. I think there's a strong understanding that, hey, they've got some strong players here, that it's Pedersen, it's Hughes, it's Markstrom, it's Horvat.
Is it Markstrom? We think it is. Well, that's a conversation we're going to have in the second half of this show, because it was brought up again last night on the broadcast. I spent some time on it on my show again today, and it is still an interesting conversation when it comes to Jacob Markstrom, the contract, what it looks like, what the Canucks can afford, what he's going to want. And those are guesses in many of our cases, but I think there's some things we know that we will get to. Dan and Brentwood last night just had such a celebratory, grateful mood for all the Sedins and those teams gave us. Being in attendance, you could tell every single person just wanted to shower our affection to every single player who gave his blood, sweat, and tears to this organization. And I'm so happy all the players who attended got their deserved ovation. Burakas, Juice, Lou, Hansen as well. The other Ring of Honor jersey retirees. The crowd was literally standing for an hour.
And by the way, shout out to John Shorthouse. Killed it.
Shorty was great. Every element of that entire operation was great. He was perfect in his emceeing of it.
Yeah.
Kevin Bieksa was fantastic.
And when's his Netflix special?
That everybody's wondering.
Hilarious.
Anybody who knew him here in Vancouver, spent any time around him, we all said the same thing. He's going to have options when he's done playing, and he still does. If he wants to just continue doing the broadcast thing here, that's going to go remarkably well for him. If he wants to get back into an organization, he could coach. He could be in management. There's a lot of different things he could do. Could be a president of a team one day. Yeah, sure. No chance I'm putting a ceiling on that guy. He was fantastic last night.
Wouldn't be surprised if you go through a night like that and everyone starts linking people to jobs. It's like, well, the Twins, do they still want to be part of the team? Or can they be development coaches? Can they be, you know, whatever it is?
Hey, how many times has Alex Burrows come back on this station and immediately there's these texts, hey, bring him back. The guy wants to be in management. He wants to build teams.
Yeah.
Get Alex Burrows back to this organization. I do think that's one that somewhere down the road, someone's going to try to get him back here. Don't you?
Does happen. And
yeah, I don't know if it happens necessarily, only because of the family links in Quebec as well.
Sure, but he's also kind of doing it the right way of, hey, I'm going to learn coaching. Figure that out. Then I'm going to go to the next spot. Do I learn underneath someone at, you know, not necessarily as an assistant manager, but just within the organization, and can I develop that part? Feels like he's looking at the next 30 years of his life being involved and dedicated to hockey, so I don't need to rush into getting that first chance now. Looks like he's building his resumes, basically the way to put it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right. On the other side, Jacob Markstrom and the ongoing conversation, one that was highlighted again last night by the national panel, Elliot Friedman going Cuba Gooding Jr. That's next right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Doc to the left wing, Doc deep for the shot, stopped by Markstrom, rebound chance for Doc, and another great save by Markstrom on the rebound. Kirby Doc cannot believe it. The 19-year-old forward stoned by Jacob Markstrom on a great rebound save, and it's still 1-0 Vancouver.
Is that the best one? There were a few candidates last night, but that one on Kirby Doc on the doorstep where he had to reach back.
Mm-hmm. The one where Doc inexplicably didn't just hit it on the rebound? I sat there with reach and we're just like, why didn't you just backhand that? It was right there. That's a rookie trying to do too much.
Well, is it that or sometimes you get it in your head that you got to do something a little extra when a guy's having one of those nights?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it, too. Just
feel like you're shooting for really tight spaces. Yeah. It's got to be right in the corner. Feels like, oh, man, he's going to be there, so I'm going to have to do something else.
I want
to
get your sense on this. Like, my takeaway from that game is the Canucks, I thought, played well defensively. They were dreadful with the puck, and that's what led to so many chances.
Are those really two different things?
Yeah.
Not always. So you're saying their positioning was fine, but they couldn't handle the puck when they had it.
Yes.
So I think there's a Venn diagram where there's a crossover between the two.
Like we've seen games where it's just odd man rush time and time again, and Jacob Markstrom is unbelievable, and he's the only reason they won that game. Like yesterday I felt like it was a complete defensive effort, that a lot of chances were from the outside, and they hit him right in the crest, and that's a credit to all five people. Now, what led to the totality of the shots was the Canucks just kept turning the puck over. And it wasn't rebound and chance and rebound and sustained. It was just, it didn't look like they could play with the puck yesterday.
They were second best team on the ice by far a considerable margin.
Yes.
And so Jacob Markstrom is the only reason they win that game.
And I get defense, you know, how you transition out of your own zone. That's part of it. But, you know, the little details that we always talk about, stick positioning. Are you boxing guys out? Are you keeping that home plate free? By and large, I felt like they did that. Just the number of shots, I didn't feel like was reflective of necessarily the high quality.
No, but there were a number of high quality. Mm-hmm. And Markstrom was great last night and sets a Canucks franchise record in the process. 49 saves, most ever by a Canucks goalie in a shutout. And Elliot Friedman brought it up last night. Contract year. And Friedman was using Renee Zellweger winning an Oscar as the backdrop for the show me the money comments. The old Rod Tidwell line.
I like how you've mentioned everyone but Tom Cruise.
So far.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get there. Don't worry. We got an hour. Help me help you. I can get there.
Who else is in that movie?
I don't know the kid's name. I always forget his
name. Oh, Lipnicki?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Jonathan?
Jonathan?
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
Good for you.
I'm great on my child, child actors.
Drew Bledsoe also in that movie. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, as we.
All right, he's in the newspaper, right?
Well, he talks to him. He talks to Jerry Maguire early. Troy Aikman's in the movie
at
the end.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Lee Steinberg, obviously, because it's kind of based on him, and he's in there at the end as well. You came here for Jerry Maguire talk. We're filling the quota for you today.
Directed by Cameron Crowe.
So Elliot Friedman
1994 movie.
Elliot Friedman brings this up last night, and it is an ongoing conversation, and I do think it's an extremely interesting one. And I tweeted out something along these lines last night. Listen, the Sedins took less to stay here. They did. That is a fact. It's not opinion. They took less to stay here. They could have made more money elsewhere. They wanted to stay here. And just before we get to the Markstrom part of this, here's what Henrik had to say about this an hour ago when I asked him why it was so important to stay in Vancouver.
Well, for us, I think you're going to make enough money as a hockey player if you play for a long time. So for us to get a chance to win here and get the teammates to sign here as well that we knew was going to help us to win, that was our number one priority. And I think you see teams now that get into cap trouble. It's tough to win that way if you have guys that make way too much money. I mean, you need to be able to produce to that level, and that's not easy when you make a lot of money. So to be able to have all the guys around us during those years that wanted to play here as well with us, that was number one for us.
Turns out he was right. They made around $71 million. It's pretty good coin. At the time of the deal, Henrik Sedin and Daniel Sedin each made around $13 million. It's not chump change, but that's not when you factor in taxes and all that. It's not the kind of money you think that they're capable of making. Their first big contract, they have an opportunity to go somewhere else, take more else. They don't. They stay here, and $6.1 million per year, nothing to sneeze at. They got paid, but they could have been paid more. I want to make this very clear before we get into this discussion. Jacob Markstrom does not owe the Canucks that.
It's not any player's duty to take that hometown discount.
Not at all. He does not owe them that at all. You want him as a Canucks fan to do that, and that's fine. And you can have your rationalization for that, but he does not owe them that, and that's a big distinction. Just because this is where he rebuilt his career, and just because he's playing well now, and just because he has a great relationship, we're led to believe, with Ian Clark, doesn't mean he owes that to them. That said, there is a value on that. And that's one that only Jacob Markstrom can determine. And when we have this conversation and the Canucks and Markstrom, to me it's about threshold. What is the number that the Canucks need to get to for Markstrom to say, I'm good not getting the extra on top of that? Because there is a value to staying in a place where you're comfortable and all of those other factors I mentioned with a team that appears to be on the rise and appears to have good things moving ahead, and you've become a relatively big part of in the locker room as well. There's a value to be placed in that, but only Jacob Markstrom knows that, and that right now is the number the Canucks are trying to get to. And I don't know if they can get there or not, and if Jacob Markstrom wants all the money, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Zero problem with it. If he says, I don't care if I play in Buffalo, that's fine. I'll take it because I want all the money. If he does that, if he goes Christian Ehrhoff, I don't blame him for a second. But what's that number? Because I believe there is one.
Of course.
I believe there's one where he'll stay. I don't know what that number is, but there is one where he'll stay.
Okay, I want to frame this as far as I think people, when we talk about how much a goalie can get, because I'm of the mind, hey, if you go over 10% for your total goaltending, that becomes an issue, right? Of how you can build the rest of the roster. What number do you feel like the Canucks can't compete if they sign Jacob Markstrom too? Is it $5 million, $6 million, $7 million, $8 million? Like, what number do you start to get concerned at?
Well, certainly $7 million is way too high.
I think that's where I'm at too, right? You can't go, it's stunning to even say seven, but I don't know if you can even broach that. But I just want to give you an idea. So when Jim Benning signed Ryan Miller, right? This is going back a bit, but it was under the impression of, hey, we need you so we can compete. Right? So that's kind of an indication how much they're willing to spend for goaltending as far as percentage of the cap. Is that a fair statement?
I think they can give you a relative idea, but they're in such a different time right now.
Yes, but it shows the importance of how the manager or Jim Benning may perceive goaltending. That you need that backbone of that team. That's fair, right? So that was 8.7% of the cap.
It is fair, but I would also say that opinions change over years. So it's very possible he has a different opinion on that now.
That's fair. But just going back to that, so that cap percentage in today's world, and you know, let's say the cap's 83 next year or something like that. It's $7.2 million. So if Jim Benning believes, hey, I can still field a competitive team by giving a goaltender this much money, which is the exact same as it was with Ryan Miller to what it is now, right? That percentage, that's kind of the number. Now, I'm not saying they're going to that, but that's $7.2 million.
Further complicating this situation are a number of other contracts, not the least of which is Roberto Luongo's.
Sure.
And you can view that however you want, but if you strictly want to view it on position, before the Canucks step on the ice next year, they're paying $3 million for their goaltending.
I look at that as buyout, though. Like, that's a charge, but I don't look at that as goaltending.
Fair enough. You don't have to.
Yeah.
That's fine. There's a lot of different ways to slice this. And I only bring it up because a lot of other contracts are going to get brought into this. So they should, because part of the difficulty in making this deal happen is some of the other money they have on the books.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are lockstep on this. You can always get rid of contracts. They want to get rid of Louis Erickson today, they can do it. As long as they're willing to sweeten the pot enough for another team. There are teams out there with cap space and have made it public. We're willing to take on bad contracts. What are you willing to give us? The Canucks can do that today if they want, but the cost is too high for them right now. They don't believe they're willing to pay that cost. They're not willing to go down that road, so they're not going to move that money. So let's say unmovable. No, nothing's unmovable. Nothing's immovable. They can move stuff if they want to, but it's going to cost them something. The question's going to be term, AAV, and are we going to need to move something else to make that happen, knowing that the following season, Pettersson and Hughes are getting paid?
There is time to...
You can kick this down the road if you want.
Yes, if you wanted to. The real issue is two off seasons from now, like when Pettersson and Hughes are officially up. That's when the real issue is.
And it's not as though you're going to lose them.
No. But again, I do kind of look at it and say, will a natural resolution for Louis Erickson surface by then? Will he walk away? What is Brandon Sutter's status? You know, he's a free agent in 2 years. Like, there's how you open up some money. Is Jay Beagle unmovable at his final year of his deal? Like, I do feel like there's ways to open up the money.
Oh, there are. Yeah. Absolutely there are.
It's more about how you execute the decisions. And, you know,
at the heart of this is how much do they believe Jacob Markstrom is a vital part of this operation?
That's it, right? It's Jacob Markstrom is going to earn his next contract. He's already earned his next contract. The question management staffs in any sport have is, it's one thing for a player to earn it. Do we trust him with the money? And is he going to live up to the money? That's a question they're always going to have. And, you know, honestly, if you look at this team, that's a question they're going to have with Jake Virtanen. He's earned his next contract. And I know I've been a detractor. He's earned whatever money is coming, whether it's from the Canucks, whether it's from the team. If it's $3 million, is he going to live up to that deal?
But it's always a bigger problem when it's goaltending.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'm just saying in as far as player analysis, right? Like, we talk a lot about guys in contract years. They have big years and then they get paid and that's all, like, there's a difference between breakthrough season and career year, right?
And the funny thing is, players know it too. I'm not sure how much you listen to BX and Kessler. I heard on one of the recent podcasts, maybe it was a couple episodes ago, where Kessler was talking about his contract, and it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but he was like, well, I was underpaid for a while, then I was overpaid at the end. That's kind of how it worked out.
And that's where the pressure comes from. A lot from when players sign big deals. I remember a story about Carson Palmer, like signed one of the biggest deals in NFL history, and his family celebrated, and he immediately left the party to go to his office to start learning the playbook all over again. They're like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I just signed a big deal. I got to live up to it. I have to earn this money now. It's great that I earned this contract, but life's not over. I got to keep going. And I look at Jacob Markstrom, and I do say that they will get full value on whatever contract he does sign. And if he chooses to take a discount. That's a big benefit to the Canucks. And you have to reward that faith and that sacrifice by utilizing it correctly.
So this is where I think it's a bigger conversation, and some of it's philosophical as well. San Jose comes into this for me, and one of the interesting theories out there about San Jose, hey, this is just a down year, and that's how they're viewing it. But a lot of people are wondering how much of that has to do with not ponying up for one of their own. And that one of their own is Joe Pavelski. It's only one guy, and it's pretty easy to make the argument, look, Erik Karlsson's a better player and can be a better player for longer. But he's not a Shark. His DNA isn't San Jose Shark DNA. Evander Kane, maybe we'll end up thinking of him as a Shark, but that's not where he developed. Pavelski was a Shark, and he was the lifeblood of the San Jose Sharks. And it's a fair conversation to have. How much has the loss of one player, but a player that people in that dressing room would have said, no, man, that guy's got to be back. I don't know what you need to do, but you got to bring him back. Like, Joe Pavelski is the San Jose Sharks. That's what he is. We make guys like that made men here. How much does that have to do with it? And Ryan Callahan, I had on earlier today, he said, yeah, there are times when you're in your exit meetings and you make it pretty clear to management or to coaches, yeah, no, that guy, he's a really, really big part of the team. I'm not sure you guys even know how big of a part he is. I can't tell you what to do as a GM, but that guy, we need him here.
If you want to achieve the things that you want to do, he needs to be here kind of thing. It's like there's that continuity part of it, right? And you want to win with your friends, you want to do all that. And that matters. That's the human element of sport that you have to consider. I get it. Exactly what you're talking about. Like, Evander Kane, better player than Joe Pavelski is right now. Erik Karlsson, awesome player. But you need that totem of your franchise of who's directing this at every level, right? So just using the Sharks as an example, yes, you have Wilson. You had their coach. You had, okay, who's running the players? Well, it was Joe Pavelski. Now it's up for grabs, and they kind of turn that locker room over to Evander Kane and Erik Karlsson. Not that they can't handle that. It's there's 20 other guys who follow Joe Pavelski, and now they're left wandering to some degree. And you know, part of sports is you need everyone pulling the same rope, and if suddenly you don't have that, and that's kind of why I look at a team like San Jose. Like, that was one of the concerns. I didn't think it'd fall off this much, but that was one of the concerns. How are they going to respond to the human element to a sports situation?
Let's take off the rose-colored glasses. The Canucks are a below-average team with outstanding goaltending. If the Canucks continue to play like they did last night, they won't make the playoffs. And if they do, they'll be knocked out in the first round. They have 10 games this year where they had no business winning. It was all on the back of goaltending. Unsigned text that comes in.
The 10 games sounds, yeah, about right. I know Shorty's talked about he and Cheech have done the exercise and they came out 10-9. I guess last night would be 10.
Yeah, I have a little trouble with the no business winning. Like, I would file last night in that category, but I don't have another 9 where it's absolute steal. They didn't deserve to be on this ice. And maybe it's semantics for me.
I would have to do the exercise myself, but I don't think 10 is too far off.
It's a lot of stolen games. A lot of stolen games. I do think there are
Jake
at least...
Jake Kamaric has kind of done that.
Well, I do think there are a lot of games where the goaltending has been the difference, but that it doesn't necessarily mean the rest of the process was so bad that it's all on the goaltender. And maybe that's semantics, and maybe we're splitting hairs in our description of that, but let's even just use that as a premise. You and I have talked about this before. One of the things about this year's Canucks is that they don't have this. If you profile all the elements of their team, it's not 7 or 8s across the board or 8 across the board. It's, well, this area is 9.
Powerful.
This area is probably 5.5. And there's peaks and valleys with this team, and the differences are goaltending and power play. Those are the two things that they do on average very well at, and that's enough in the regular season, especially to win you a lot of games.
And more importantly, nothing of all the traits you'd want for a team, like nothing is a 4. They just, it looks like the way this team was built is they were built to be balanced. And can the growth of certain players over the course of the season elevate everyone? And that's kind of what happened. And now is there more growth next year? Again,
and part of that growth that you're counting on is maturity from your young players that you've hitched your wagon to at this point and said they are big parts of our team. Our scoring is going to have to come from them. And there's a learning process for those players to go through.
I feel like I've got to say this every day now, but like this is year one of everything working. Year one. And this isn't even like, – if you want to look at next year and say, okay, well, Quinn Hughes is a superstar and he's no longer a rookie. Now it's – I can listen to that argument. But once you confirm Elias Pettersson's your star, it's go time, right? So this is year one of all that. They're learning these lessons. You can't learn all the lessons at once. You can't. So you want it all. You just can't have it all at once.
And it's, quite frankly, it's not really responsible. It's irresponsible of us to speculate what next year looks like because we don't know what this team's going to look like yet.
Sure.
We know a couple pieces that are going to be here, but we don't know what this team looks like yet. So I can't sit here and tell you, well, this is year one of five where their window is – no, I can't tell you that. I can deal with this year in the here and now. And are there things that could absolutely regress next year? Yep, goaltending's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't get this level of goaltending as often as the Canucks have this season. And that is a concern that the team needs to address. And one of the scenarios, we talked about some with Marchand, one of the scenarios is that he wants too much, we're not willing to pay that, he goes to market. That's one of the scenarios. And that can still be a successful scenario. If you use that money, if you use that cap space to build a better team in front of your goaltending, Columbus is a good example of that this year. Columbus let their guy walk. There's no way they were handing over that kind of money. Florida said, we've done this long enough. It's go time for our guys like Barkov and Huberdeau. We got to go now. If he needs all the money, we're the guys who are willing to give it to him. So be it. It's working out just fine for Columbus. Columbus pays almost nothing for its goaltending. And its goaltending's been great. I don't know if that's sustainable next year, but they decided we've got enough coming in the organization, and if we put a good enough team and a good enough system in front of that goaltending, we're going to be just fine. And so far, they've been proven right. And Florida right now is tracking to get on the playoffs, and if they get there, they'll feel like they were right.
That's kind of an interesting thought here. Gordy Locke tweeting us. Games that Marky carries. How is that different when Ovi scores Hatties? Stars carry their teams, hence why they get heart votes. Do we look at goaltending different than skaters? Because, you know, Ovechkin needs someone to pass from the puck at times, and it's obviously more of a team effort to score a goal.
Well, the goaltender is the one player who can make up for everything else. Mm-hmm. Ovi can score all he wants, and Edmonton's the perfect example of this last year. Yeah, you can have that many points from those two guys, and it still might not be enough. Whereas if you have the goaltending, everything else could suck, but he can continue to backstop you into the playoffs. So, yes, we do look at it a little differently, and I think Edmonton's a fair example to point out here as well. Yeah, you're right. What are the Oilers without Dreisaitl? Just take one of those guys away, and we're seeing a really small sample size of that right now. Take one of those guys away. In a salary cap world, very few teams are you going to go across the board and go, yep, checking everything. And those are our tier one teams. But we've been very clear on this from the outset of this season. The Canucks are not that. The Canucks are a tier two team.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on specific positions on this roster, they were either going to be a team that was closer to, as you put out, 11 overall, or maybe they're closer to 19.
I think they
started. There's a couple of places that are going to swing this season, and those are coming through for them right now.
I think they definitely started the season around 19, and you know where are they right now in the entire NHL standings? I want to say they are 10th right now. That's growth from where you started from the beginning of the season. That 10 points or that 10 power ranks swing. That's the growth from Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, and Jacob Markstrom. That's what that looks like.
Response to the other texter from Bean in Delta. We may have stolen 10 games that we did not deserve to win, but we've also lost a few games that we deserve to win. 6-5 shootout loss to Washington, 8-6 loss to Pittsburgh are a couple that come to mind. Bean says it all evens out. This one comes in from James. Listen, the goaltending's peaking now. It's making the team look a lot better than they really are. Did you see how many shots he faced last night? Honestly, I think there's a case to get value for Markstrom and go with Demko moving forward.
Stop.
This would be a terribly unpopular idea, but it would be staying the course with the rebuild.
What staying the course? That part's done. You're not in rebuild territory anymore. Like, you have Elias Pettersson, you have Quinn Hughes. You're in go mode now. And I'll say this before. You get 11 years It feels like a long time. It's not. You get 11 shots at it with Elias Pettersson, and you've got to get it right. So you can't just continue to wait. Oh, next year you can do it. No. Like, think, okay, I was having this discussion with Aldi on the Canucks pod last week. Like, the Sedin era, we know it spans a long time, but because of Naslin, Bertuzzi, all those guys, like, what's really the Sedin peak?
It's about 10 years.
Is it even that long?
Well, I would say, like, they came into their own 05-06.
Okay.
And then they make the playoffs in 14-15.
Do we look
they
at
were
them
excellent
as...
players. They were still excellent players.
Okay.
They're not at the height of their power.
Fair. But the team was...
They're still excellent players. They're what, mid-70s points players at that point?
I'll look at it a bit shorter. I'll look at it about like a 6-year window, 7-year window, somewhere around there, right? But that's peak. Over a 17-18-year career. A third of their career was peak. So again, you can't just assume, hey, eventually we'll get it right. No, man, you got to get going now. And if you're constantly just moving assets for the future, you're shortening your chance to get this right.
Well, here's the other thing I think people miss on the, hey, maybe you can flip Markstrom now, go Demko moving forward, get an asset. Here's the other thing you miss. Not only do you have a guy who gives you a shot as long as you get to the playoffs. That's one thing. What value is there in what Quinn Hughes thinks of this organization, what Elias Pettersson thinks of this organization, and the message it would send if you traded away Jacob Markstrom?
We just talked about that, the effect that had on San Jose. And also, here's the other thing. Who's trading for a goalie right now? Carolina? They've got two, like, they're locked into two guys for some time. Who is a contender that is going to trade for a goalie right now? Exactly. There's no one available. There's no teams that are going to risk it all to say, you know what, we do need a goalie right now.
How often do contenders give up big assets for a pending UFA goalie? When's the last time that happened?
Yeah, it just stop it. That's it. I appreciate the text, but that's not based in reality. Because you need a partner to trade with.
Can I add to that rebuild comment? You can tomorrow, Texter. Tomorrow you can add, because Canuck Central is at a close. Our final Canuck Central of the week comes your way in 23 hours time. What's coming up on the program tonight?
A lot. Obviously, we'll still go through what happened yesterday. Dan Murphy, Patrick Johnson, and also Patrick Sharp. You remember all the battles they had with the Blackhawks, and of course they had that great moment exchanging the sticks there in the end. He will join us on the program at 6 o'clock.
Fantastic stuff. Reach Deep is up next in your home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.